Disclaimer. Today's episode of 90s Crime Time talks about a crime against a child and gang violence. Listener's discretion is advised. Hello. It's November 20th, 2025. My name is Simone, and this is 90s Crime Time. Hello and welcome to this brand new episode of 90s Crime Time. And if you're new to 90s Crime Time, welcome to the show. Like always, I hope you all have had a great week so far and you're looking forward to a great weekend. And again, as I mentioned before the episode started, today's case talks about a crime against a child and gang violence. Therefore, again, listener's discretion is advised. And with that, let's dive in to today's case. The year was 1995, and in the spacious Nashville neighborhood of Antioch, Tennessee, this part of town was known as a place that reflected Nashville's broader growth, diversity, and suburban expansion. The area had been a surge of development through the late 1980s and early 1990s, as more Nashvillians moved outward from the big city life in search of affordable homes, new schools, and quiet neighborhoods. In response, subdivisions were being built rapidly throughout the area, turning old farms and fields into cul-de-sacs and shopping centers. Speaking of shopping centers, many Antioch residents and residents of the surrounding areas flocked to the area's famed Hickory Hollow Mall. The mall anchored several affordable stores, a movie theater, seasonal community events, and a large food court where people of all ages dined and socialized. And while it was great that Antioch experienced strong business prosperity and was viewed as a promising, family-friendly area, reports state that not everyone in Antioch felt safe due to rising concerns from residents about car break-ins and theft around the mall, as well as drug activity and youth fighting in some neighborhoods. However, in October 1995, what no one in Antioch or the surrounding area was expecting was a report of a heinous murder that happened at one of their local grocery stores. And even worse was finding out the age of the victim. And while detectives investigated the murder, it would leave the people of Antioch and the surrounding areas angry and seeking justice. In the following case, you'll find out who the victim was, the investigation, and shocking aftermath in a case I title, A Child in the Crossfire. On the evening of October 17th, 1995, at around 7 p.m. in Antioch, Tennessee, the Mega Market grocery store, located at 5388 Hickory Hollow Parkway, was bustling as usual, serving many customers. During this time, a woman named Regina Dickerson entered the store to purchase airline tickets at the store's Western Union counter. accompanied by her 12-year-old daughter, Adrian. While Regina was buying the tickets, Adrian asked her mother for a quarter so she could buy some bubblegum. According to reports, Regina told Adrian she didn't have change at the time and asked her to wait until after she finished buying the tickets, as she would more than likely have change afterward. However, Adrian was restless for the gum and remembered her mother had change in her car's ashtray, and after Regina turned her back, Adrian crept back out the store and went to the car to retrieve a quarter. And after she found the quarter, she walked back towards the store. Around this time, a woman picking up her son, an employee at the Mega Market, noticed a sort of large bluish-gray car with a couple of people in the front seat, and possibly three or four in the back seat, enter the lot. She also heard loud rap music coming from the car, and although the music was annoying, she didn't think too much of it. But she did eventually get out of the car to see what was taking her son so long, as she had been waiting for him for some time. As she got out of the car, she noticed a dent on the fender of her car and bent down to check it out. But as she did, she heard what sounded like a gunshot coming from her left side. As she got back up, she noticed the same bluish-gray car slowly leaving the parking lot. At the front of the store, another employee was outside taking a break when he too heard the possible gunshot and ran back inside. However, at about the same time he heard the shot, he saw a small figure fall to the ground. Also around this time, several other customers who were either inside or leaving the store heard the shot and ran for safety. Reports state that Regina also heard the shot as well, but wasn't sure how much danger she was in, until she witnessed a woman run frantically inside the store and scream, "Did he come in?" Not knowing what exactly was going on, Regina followed her instincts and realized she needed to get herself and Adrian to safety. However, she couldn't find her. Adrian was just beside her, asking for a quarter, but now she was gone. Regina frantically searched the aisles for her daughter, calling her name, but never hearing an answer. After not finding her inside the store, she rushed outside to check on Adrian, but when she did, she ran into the horrible sight of a young girl lying in a pool of blood near the front of the store. And it was Adrian, who had been shot dead, still clutching the quarter in her hand. According to reports, Adrian Nicole Dickerson was born in 1983 to a loving and religious family that included her parents, Regina and Terry, and a brother. Not much is publicly known about Adrian, but she was known to be very bubbly and to have many friends at school. Speaking of school, at the time of her murder, Adrian was a middle school student who made excellent grades and frequently made the honor roll. She also sang in her church's choir, and everyone who met her was said to love her. That is why, after the news of her murder made the evening news, the community of Antioch and the city of Nashville as a whole were outraged. Yes, there have been unfortunately many children murdered in the city before, but for many, Adrian's murder felt different. Maybe it was because her murder happened in front of a busy grocery store. Or perhaps it was because when Adrian's picture was shown with a sweet smile on the news, it made the city fall in love with her sweet spirit that oozed through people's screens. Or perhaps it was due to her young age, because who on earth would take the life of such a young child? And due to the intense feelings surrounding Adrian's case, the city wanted answers fast. First, though, the city mourned with Adrian's family when on October 21st, 1995, Adrian's funeral was held at her family's church, and there were around 800 attendees present, including many of her friends and classmates. The pastor, who eulogized Adrian, addressed the congregation and said they would be celebrating her life instead of just grieving her death. And also added, quote unquote, "I know there is an array of mixed emotions, but the Lord said to all things give thanks." He also called Adrian a quote unquote sleeping princess. Reports also state that many of the younger people in attendance spoke to the press, with one of her classmates telling the press, quote unquote, "Adrian and I rode the same bus for the last 2 years, and her seat was right behind mine. We used to joke and have a lot of fun. Now when I look back, there's an empty seat. I was thinking when I first went into that church today that Adrian would raise up out of that casket and say she was playing a joke, but it didn't happen." After her services and burial, Adrian's mother, Regina, told the press in part, quote unquote, regarding Adrian's killer, "We would ask him to please come forward and confess his sin. God is faithful and just to forgive him, and we already have." However, reports state that at the beginning of the investigation, detectives had few clues to follow. Reports did state, though, from the coroner's office, that Adrian died from a single gunshot wound to her neck and more than likely died before she hit the ground. A month after the slaying, reports state that detectives had gathered a bunch of information regarding Adrian's case. For one, detectives told the press that Adrian's killer probably fired from a high-powered rifle from a small hillside north of the store, and that they recovered a 7mm bullet, which more than likely came from that rifle. Also, detectives reported that some empty malt liquor cans were found near the same hillside, but the closest store that sold them was 4 to 5 miles away. However, they noted that whoever had the liquor near the grocery store was probably not a shopper there that night. But they still had not pinpointed a possible suspect or suspects, and the investigation intensified for several months. Meanwhile, as many Nashvillians waited for more answers, the city decided to open the Nashville Children's Memorial Garden in honor of children slain in the city, and one of the dedications was to Adrian. Also, many in the city and in the area held weekly vigils praying that her killer or killers be brought to justice. However, reports state that after several anniversaries had passed after Adrian's murder, and despite the reward for any information increasing over the years, there were no leads. But it seemed as if, according to reports, Metro Nashville detectives obsessed over Adrian's case as they worked around the clock, hoping to bring her killers to justice. And as luck would have it, detectives announced to the press in 1998 what Adrian's loved ones and many Nashvillians had been waiting for. They finally made an arrest for Adrian's murder. And the suspects' names were Gedanjale Berry and Anthony Davis, both age 22, and they'd both been charged with one count of first-degree murder and one count of felony murder. We'll be back after a quick break. Not much is known publicly about Gadangelé and Christopher, or about their upbringing. But what is known is that the two were friends who had difficult childhoods, and were said to be members of the Gangsters Disciples street gang. According to reports, the Gangster Disciples is a gang founded by Larry Hoover and David Barksdale in 1968 in Chicago, Illinois. The gang consists primarily of Black Americans and has confirmed members in over 30 states. And reports state that back in the 90s, Gadangelé and Christopher wanted to put Tennessee's members, or fellow GDs, on the map. And according to another report, the two young men had recruited other young men and teens to join, and had made them, quote-unquote, baby gangsters, until they were officially initiated. The report further states that investigators believed the two went to the Mega Market on that October 1995 night to initiate someone in the gang, or even worse, killed someone for thrills. Reports also state that right before the pair was indicted for Adrian's murder, detectives were at a standstill on suspects, until they received a tip from a young man named Calvin Carter, who had been held in jail for harassing his girlfriend, who said he knew the suspects and about Adrian's murder. According to reports, Calvin told detectives that on October 17, 1995, he was riding in a car with Gadangelé, Christopher, and another teenager named Antoine Kirby. As they were driving around, they smoked marijuana dipped in formaldehyde, blasting loud music, when they arrived at the Mega Market grocery store. There, Calvin said, Christopher vowed to put the Gangster Disciples on the map in Tennessee, and decided that by doing so, they needed to kill a white person. And they spotted a white woman who was the alleged target, but instead killed Adrian by accident. Meanwhile, on the front page of the local paper, many residents were shocked when Gadangelé and Christopher's photos appeared, showing them walking into court, with Christopher wearing sunglasses and Gadangelé smiling at the cameras. Residents were also shocked when, after reading about their indictment, it wasn't hard for detectives to find the suspects, as they were already in custody awaiting trial for a double murder. You see, according to reports, back on February 28, 1996, a few months after Adrian's murder, the bodies of cousins Gregory Ewing and D'Angelo Lee were found in a remote part of a construction site in the Berry Hill area of Nashville, and they'd both been shot over 5 times, including both being shot 3 times in their heads. And after a lengthy investigation, detectives arrested Gadangelé and Christopher for the double murders, and they faced the death penalty. However, before they were to stand trial for the double murders, they were preparing to stand trial for Adrian's murder. And after detectives had their suspects in custody, they compared the two cases. They discovered bullet fragments found at Adrian's murder scene were very similar to a rifle found in Christopher's home after the double murder, meaning this was more than likely the weapon that killed her.
Thank you.
Reports state that Davidson County officials set the trial date for June 1999. However, the attorneys representing Gadangele and Christopher urged prosecutors to move the trial, as they believed they might not get a fair trial in Davidson County. This was because the attorneys were well aware that many in Nashville wanted vengeance against the two, and that the media portrayed them as unrepentant killers, especially since Gadangele was seen smiling at the cameras. And the defense got its wish, as the trial was moved several miles away to Hamilton County. At trial, the state called employees and customers who were present the night of Adrian's murder, and they all collectively heard the shot that killed Adrian. But most did not see who shot her. But some did testify about seeing a bluish-gray car driving away slowly from the scene. Later, the state called their star witness, Calvin Carter, to the stand. He stated that on October 17, 1995, he went to Antoine Kirby's home in search of Antoine's older brother, who was his friend. While Calvin did not find Antoine's brother, the witness did encounter Christopher Davis, who lived next door at his grandmother's home. They struck up a conversation, and Calvin said Christopher started talking to him about the gangster disciples, that the gang was making money, that he wanted Calvin to join and sell drugs, and that Calvin would not only make money, but also live longer if he joined. He was wary at first, but Christopher invited him to go on a car ride with him, Antoine, Gadangele, and another young man named Jonathan Davis. Calvin also testified that once in the car, the group smoked weed and drove around for approximately 40 minutes before arriving at the mega market. At that point, Christopher turned down the music and announced, "We're fixing to do something. Let's skin some white folks." He parked the car on the left side of the lot with the passenger side closest to the door, nodded at Gadangele, grabbed the rifle, and pointed it out the window. Christopher continued and said he observed Christopher say something to Gadangele around this time. Thereafter, Calvin slid down in the seat, but saw Gadangele apparently aimed the weapon toward the mega market and heard the fire. Calvin then stated that Christopher drove slowly out of the parking lot, sped away from the scene, and turned the music up loud again. And he said, because he had eased down in the back seat, he said he saw little else and initially denied knowing that anyone had been killed. Antoine Kirby also testified that he went to Christopher Davis's grandmother's apartment shortly after school on October 17, 1995. While there, he observed the defendants enter a separate room where they remained for about 5 to 10 minutes. He further stated that when the two emerged, Christopher was holding a rifle that looked exactly like the weapon admitted as an exhibit in court. And he proclaimed, "I'm gonna peel some white folks." Antoine interpreted peel to mean murder. In this context, and stated that thereafter, Christopher had selected those to ride with him. Christopher Davis drove, Gadangele Berry occupied the front passenger seat with the rifle, and the back seat held Jonathan Davis, Calvin Carter, and himself. Antoine went on to say that once at the market, Christopher parked at an angle with the passenger side of the car closest to the store. Then he said he witnessed Christopher lean over towards Gadangele. While Antoine said he could not hear over the sound system, he next observed Christopher's lips forming the words, "Go ahead and shoot. Go ahead and shoot." Antoine further stated that he was unsure of how many shots had been fired, but he knew that Gidangele had aimed in the direction of the store. He further stated that he thought the shot was for a white woman who was putting something in or getting something from her trunk while standing approximately 30 to 35 feet from their car. And then, after the shot, Christopher drove slowly away. Antoine also testified that 4 months before Adrian's murder, Christopher approached him about murdering someone, and that in return, Antoine would move up the ranking in the gang to foot soldier. But he did not go through with it. And after a few more testimonies from other witnesses and detectives in Adrian's case, the jury rested. And in late June 1999, both Gidangele Berry and Christopher Davis were found guilty of Adrian's murder and sentenced to life. Months later, in 2000, for their double murder trial, both men were again found guilty of first-degree murder and the added charge of robbery, in which they were later sentenced to death. However, fast-forwarding to 2008, prosecutors in Adrian's case learned that Calvin Carter, the star witness, was actually locked up in juvenile detention and could not have possibly witnessed the murder. And when this was discovered, a judge threw out the guilty verdicts against Gidangele and Christopher. A report states, however, that the same judge upheld their guilty verdicts in their double murder case, but tossed out their death penalty sentences because, quote unquote, Adrian's murder was part of the prosecution's argument that the two deserved to die. Gidangele and Christopher were then eventually sentenced to life without parole in their double murder case. However, again, after their convictions in Adrian's case were overturned, it outraged her family and many in the community. But years after the overturn, Gidangele Berry was retried and found guilty of Adrian's murder again and sentenced to life. In the years since Adrian's tragic murder, her parents have given some local interviews about their daughter and gun violence, with her father, Terry Dickerson, telling the local press in an interview in 2005, in part, "I still have a sour taste in my mouth for these young men. They needed some guidance in their life, somebody to wrap their arms around them and love them, which I don't think they were getting. It's real, real sad." He also added regarding Adrian, "I had always hoped she'd go to college. She was good at her classwork. We'll never know what she could have been." The story of the tragic murder of Adrian Dickerson comes primarily from the sources of the Tennessean, but there are some other sources I'll put in the notes. All right, thank you for tuning in to this latest brand new episode of 90s Crime Time. And I do have a few things I'd like to say regarding Adrian's case. Number one, I was born and raised in the Nashville area, And this case was huge growing up. It was on the news every night, which it deserved to be because it was a tragic death of a little girl. Not as much as like JonBenet Ramsey's case, which was next year, but it was, according to my parents, very shocking to have this little girl's murder pretty much around the clock every night on local news. And sometimes when I was a little girl, I did see Adrienne's case and picture plastered on the news regarding her murder, looking for any clues and things like that, which again, it was deserved because Adrienne's tragic murder was so ridiculous and uncalled for, like most murders, like I said, unless it's self-defense. It also scared me since it happened close to where I was raised. And Adrienne's murder also, it just was a lot, you know, a mess. The whole case was a mess for me, like researching this case as an adult. I don't know what happened to Calvin after it was discovered he was actually locked up and why he would have wanted to testify and lie in the first place. Maybe so he could try to get some, get a lesser charge or sentence due to his harassment charge with his girlfriend at the time, as well as Antoine, since he said Calvin was in the car too. Clearly he wasn't. I don't know why he would lie and say Calvin was in the car either. I don't know what happened with that as well, as far as Antoine clearly lying as well, because Calvin was proved to not be in the car. I also could not find anything on this Jonathan Davis, who was allegedly in the car as well. I don't know if he was related to Christopher, any type of relation between those two. I couldn't find anything. I just saw the affidavit saying Antoine and Calvin talked about a Jonathan Davis being in the car, but I couldn't find anything, whether if he was interrogated or anything about that. The defense also, I know this is their job, but the defense tried to, from what I read, tried to get the jury to have leniency on Gadangele and Christopher because of their apparent tough upbringings. I do apologize about that noise in the background, guys. Sorry about that. Also, like I said, I don't think it's fair. Like, I know that the defense, that's their job to defend their clients, but a lot of people have rough upbringings and they don't go around shooting innocent people or robbing people, things like that. And I don't think that's fair. I'm glad the jury saw through that ploy and sentenced them, well, found them guilty anyway. Also, I didn't focus on the double murder case on this episode. I solely wanted to focus on Adrienne's case, although the double murder of D'Angelo Lee and Gregory Ewing is still very sad and stupid. It was ruled a robbery. I'll put the affidavit about their case in the show notes if you'd like to read about the double murder of D'Angelo and Gregory. I can't believe I said his name like that. I'm so sorry, sir. D'Angelo and Gregory. I'll put that in the show notes. Again, like I said, I wanted to focus more on Adrienne's case than the double murder, but you can read the affidavit in the show notes. And that's it. Thank you for tuning in to this brand new episode of 90s Crime Time, and I hope you found it interesting. If you have not already and want to, I would love for you to leave a positive review on whatever podcast platform you listen to 90s Crime Time, if they have a ratings or and or review system. Thank you again for tuning in. Stay safe and healthy, and I'll see you very soon for a brand new episode of 90s Crime Time.